Hey, good evening, everybody. It's Jim Hoffman here from EMS Office Hours. If you're listening live tonight, I appreciate you taking the time to join me on this live EMS podcast. Tonight, going to talk a little bit about safety, more or less, and more importantly, safety in the kind of the age of the post-Osama bin Laden type age, where as providers, of course, we know that we have to keep maintaining our vigilance with our safety and always be on alert for these types of terrorist-type acts. The fact that bin Laden is dead doesn't necessarily mean that we can let our guard down. And in fact, we might have to actually keep our guard even more alert and more up than we have in the past. I'm going to be getting Josh Knapp on the line with us, and Josh is actually a WMD awareness instructor, and he's going to kind of give a little perspective on that. We might have another caller or two as well to join us today and give their perspective and on it as well, their concerns even, or and maybe some quick tips that you can just kind of keep in the front of your mind when it comes to this type of topic. Now, of course, this isn't an actual full awareness course, a WMD course, but I'm hoping that this will at least allow you to get some information and keep some information in the front of your mind in your day-to-day activities, and that's my goal for tonight's show. Before we start, two quick freebies I want to mention to you guys. Speaking about WMD and MCIs and stuff like that, we have a free recorded webinar I did about a week and a half ago over on the website on the safety first 4 T's of MCI management. A pretty decent webinar we did with Stephen Canarian from the LaGuardia Community College's paramedic program, really gave some great information there. It's a free recorded webinar. It's about an hour long. You can put the link below the show notes, of course, but the main page you can find it at is over at emsseo.com. You can click on the seminars tab along the top to get a hold of that. And the other thing I want to mention, if you haven't heard yet, is that you can get a free EMS-related email that we're offering now. And I've actually been able to team up with Windows Live accounts, and they're actually powering the email now through the domain name, which is pretty cool. And I'm hoping to bring some more features to that in the near future. So I'm working with them to get some even more features on board with that as well. So keep an eye out for that. You can sign up now, of course, and claim a good name and your name actually for the free email. So don't let, you know, your name at medicemail.com pass you by. Go over to medicemail.com and sign up for your free email address while it's available to you. So you don't want somebody else grabbing your name. So make sure you head on over there and grab that. So I've got two callers on the line. I want to bring them both in real quick, and let's get this conversation started, and hopefully we'll be able to get some great tips out there for you guys tonight. Josh, you're with us?
Yeah, I am, Jim. Thanks for having me.
Josh, hang on just a second. I have one other call. I want to bring this person in and see who it is and see. It might be actually Stephen, actually Canarian, giving us a call. So maybe we'll get him in and get it going as well.
Great.
Hi, caller. You're with us on EMS Office Hours. Who is this? Hello? Hello?
Is that me?
Yeah, hi. Who's this?
It's Tim.
Hey, Tim. What's going on? How you doing?
I didn't realize that I was on hold there to talk to you.
Tim, tonight we're talking a little bit about awareness, terrorism awareness, and just kind of talking a little bit about, you know, this isn't enough time really, and even the venue really to do a proper awareness class for WMD and for terrorist attacks and stuff like that. But I think it might be a good way to maybe give some of the listeners kind of a heads up and to hopefully give them some key tips that they can keep in the front of their mind on their day-to-day activities. So, Josh, real quick, just give me a little bit of, if you can just give people a little bit about your background as far as your awareness instructor training and what maybe you think the people that aren't instructors or haven't maybe taken the WMD recently can actually kind of focus on.
Sure, Jim. Well, I am a Center for Domestic Preparedness, CDP, indirect instructor. In other words, I've been trained down at the CDP to teach WMD awareness and have taken a whole bunch of other courses. I've also gone through their program where I've actually handled live nerve agents like VX or sarin gas. I've been trained in nuclear response and some explosive response as well. And I'm also a hazmat technician here in New York. That's basically my background. I've been teaching WMD awareness. This is 2011 for probably about 6 years now. And it really comes down to the same basic skills, just, and these are some of the things that they allude to when you're in a course. It's just to be around you, you know, just to be aware of what's around you. If you, you know, when we talk about EMS, we've always talked about scene safety. And we talk about the number one goal in our jobs is to go home to our families at the end of the day and to go home in one piece and not have issues and illnesses and other things going on. And that's the goal. Does it happen in a perfect world? You know, does it happen in our world? Not 100%, but, you know, the more that you're aware, the more precautions that you can take, the better your chances of achieving that. So, you know, one of the basic things and what we start out the weapons course with is just to, you know, be aware. And what I like to do is I like to talk to my students about, you know, and this is alluding to my comic book days, but, you know, get your spider sense going. You know, if you're sort of the hairs on the back of your neck are tingling and things aren't quite right, go with that. You're in the field. You are facing dangers that you might not be aware of. To be a little bit more cautious under those circumstances, hey, there's nothing wrong with that. And it's the type of thing that can save your life. When you talk about what are chances of having a terrorist attack or another terrorist attack, just look at history. I mean, they continuously happen. There's always factions. And another thing to keep in mind is that it doesn't have to be a nation state or a foreign country that initiates that terrorist attack. A number of attacks, you know, the Edward R. Murrow building with Timothy McVeigh, that was domestic. If you look at Columbine, that was domestic. I mean, if you look at the Olympic bombing down in South Carolina, Atlanta, you know, that was domestic. So, you know, the dangers we face aren't necessarily from the outside communities who don't like our country, who don't like the way we live. They could be somebody who has a grudge with the federal government. There was an incident, last year, a year and a half ago, where a guy in Texas had a problem with the IRS and flew his private plane into the IRS building. You know, so these are the things, you know, are the dangers around? They're definitely around. Do we walk with, you know, a hard hat on all the time? No. But if you keep your awareness up and if you look for the things that are not normal or not normal around your community, your chances of being safer greatly increase. And when I talk about what's not normal, we use examples like, you know, it's summertime and you see the guy with the big puffy down-filled coat. I mean, you know, that's something that's out of the ordinary. You know, you have a street corner, and you know, in New York City, we have we're a little bit more vigilant. We definitely have a homeless population, and sometimes seeing a bag, a suitcase, or something next to a building or something may not seem out of the ordinary. Although we take it now, we take it very seriously. But if you're in an outside community, keep in mind, you know, outside of a major metropolitan area, keep in mind you might have industrial plants, you might have nuclear reactors, you might have something that could be a target. And if there's a major highway or a road and you see a van parked underneath the overpass and it's been there for a while or it looks out of place, you know, there's the old thing we're using in New York, if you see something, say something. So you really have to be a little bit more, say, on guard and aware of your surroundings to notice if something is out of place.
Yeah, you know, Josh, it's funny because a lot of times, you know, people start thinking that this is like, you know, primarily for big cities and things like New York and Los Angeles and all, but you bring up a good point as far as, you know, if you have industrial, you know, plants, things like that. Actually, when I was working in New Jersey, I'm thinking, well, you know, my days of having to deal with that type of issues are over since I left the city. But it turned out that right where I was working, there was a naval station, and they would have a train that would go through the entire town that would be bringing weapons and stuff back and forth to the naval station. So, you know, and that, again, like you said, can be a potential target. You know, Tim, where you are, do you go through anything special as far as WMD training, or is it just the general awareness classes that most providers are going through these days?
Tim?
I have done the hazmat stuff beyond the basics, but most people don't. I find it interesting how the different chemicals operate on the body and the things that we can do about it. A lot of the chemical attacks, we're not even going to notice at any time. We'd be able to do something about it for ourselves, but you know, the awareness that something is wrong is something that we do want to focus on.
Well, chemical
like
attack.
Right now, I'm right down the street from Fort Detrick. So
right.
That is weapon central for chemical biological weapons.
And a chemical attack doesn't necessarily have to be a sophisticated, process or a sophisticated chemical such as sarin or VX or nerve gas of what we typically think of chemical attacks. And if you want to look forward in terms of what might be planning, look at what's being used today. If you look at Iraq during some of the, you know, a couple of years ago, actually, with some of the major attacks against U.S. forces and the Iraqi people, there was a blowing up of chlorine tankers. Now, there's a famous case in Gainesville, South Carolina, going back, I think, you'll have to excuse me on the date, it's about maybe 20 years, 15 years, and there was a overturned train. And if you think about the number of industrial chemicals that can kill you, you know, everybody should have, at least in New York State, an ERG, an emergency response guidebook. It's the orange guidebook you usually have in the back of the glove box in the bus or underneath the
coffee stains on
seat.
It.
Yeah, exactly. But that you open it up and there's a whole bit there's great information in there. And if you look in the front and the back, there are these set of white pages. There's maybe 30 pages of information, general information that everybody should read. And it goes into now with the new 2008 version with what WMD is. But all the rest of that, all those hundreds of pages are natural, you know, chemicals that get transported every day. And, you know, you have a train derailment and it's a chlorine tanker. Do you know what to do? Do you know the basics of, you know, upwind, uphill, and, you know, away from the, away from, you know, staying far enough away from the incident? These are things that, you know, people should take.
Yeah. You know, it's funny because even like you mentioned, a lot of things that get transported on a daily basis, a lot of it falls below the requirement even to have placards and
oh my God, yeah,
and proper warnings on the vehicles. And if that vehicle gets into an accident or even becomes a target for something, it can still cause significant damage, to the immediate population. And it's probably an easier target for people to attempt to use because of the fact that it's not as protected, let's say, as something that has a more prominent chemical being transported. So, you know, and like you said, I think it's the awareness part is the biggest thing. And, Tim, you bring a good point up that not as many people out there that are in EMS are as aware as they should be. You know, too many people just want to get to the scene, they want to get involved with the patients and things, and they're not taking into consideration that if they get going to a call and they're getting reports of a significant amount of patients and you know, a lot of fatalities or injuries without signs of trauma, things like that, they have to try to start thinking that perhaps this might be something more than just a run-of-the-mill type MCR. There might be something else that they have to start looking into, and other key points they have to kind of focus on when they're approaching the scene to maintain their safety. You know, because we always say, like you said early on, you know, safety is the biggest thing for us. And if we're not safe, we're not able to help anybody. If we get injured ourselves, we'll just become part of the problem, not part of the solution.
Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, one of the basic things that we should all be learning, and it's a national requirement, and it's one of those things that is skipped over because it's training and it costs money and it's a pain in the butt, but it serves you to be knowledgeable about ICS, incident command structure. And
sure,
you can take those courses right online. They take probably, if you've never seen this subject matter before, it takes a couple hours. If you've seen the stuff before, you can breathe through it in an hour, 45 minutes, and then you actually get a federal cert that you've been trained in this. And then if you're at an MCI or if you're at a major incident, you have the basics and the understanding on how to deal within the response. Not deal with necessarily what the response is addressing, but deal with, you know, there's the structure of who's telling who to do what and when it's okay to do it and when it's okay not to. And this sort of goes into what you and I were talking about earlier, Jim, is like, you know, this is the time when it doesn't pay to be a cowboy.
Yeah, I mean, it's important, I think, to like you said, the hazardous material stuff, most of us are not trained. We don't have the equipment to deal with it. We don't have the training to deal with it. And there are special – most agencies have a special unit that's trained to do it, that has the equipment to do it, to decontaminate an area, things like that. This is why I think, you know, we have to keep kind of pointing out that it's our safety we have to keep in mind, because we're not going to be able to really, you know, like you said, deal with the actual incident itself. We have to kind of deal with the surroundings of that incident. You know, and if we can take care of patients that are not in, let's say, a hot zone, you know, perhaps we'd be able to go ahead and, you know, make a difference without, you know, injuring ourselves. And, you know, it's the hazardous material, you know, training, it's hard to come by sometimes. I know, Tim, you said you've taken some classes, you know, outside just a standard, I guess, requirement of the awareness classes that are out there. But not everyone is out there doing that. Not everyone is out there taking those hazardous material classes. You know, unfortunately, it's the type of thing where people are, I think, well, it's not going to really happen, or I'm not in a high-risk area for it to happen, or it's so infrequent, it's not on the top of my list as, let's say, you know, taking a 12-week class or taking, you know, ACLS classes and things like that that are more mandatory for somebody to have than the additional hazmat training type thing. You know, so it's just...
Well, there is no real high-risk area. If you're in New York City, your chances of running across anything, even September 11th, are not that much greater than the chances of somebody in the middle of nowhere running across some sort of violent incident. It's something that we exaggerate because we focus on it. We talk about it all the time.
Right.
It directly affected EMS in that a lot of EMS providers were victims in September 11th, and we don't expect to be the victims, which is why so often you see people running into a scene. Like, we should never run toward something unless maybe you got a kid who's your kid in there. Only time
and
we should run
then,
is when we're running away.
And even then, unless you're equipped to respond, I mean, you know, and I'm not sure I necessarily agree with you, Tim, in terms of high risk or you know what you face. But I think I get what you're saying in terms of that wherever you are, you face a litany of common and everyday dangers, whether you're in a big city or out in the field. I mean, I certainly don't run the risk in New York City of being run over by a combine. But if you're out in the fields of Kansas, you know, and you're servicing somebody and you're helping somebody who's in a farm accident, you've got to be aware of farm material. But, you know, and that also, you know, along with that, you bring into the world of, like, organophosphate poisoning. We know it in New York City because that's the training we get for the Mark I kits and nerve gas exposure. But the truth of the matter is far more organic phosphate poisoning happened out in rural America where people are dealing with pesticides than anywhere else. So, you know, those are skill sets that, you know, you may not concentrate on but are definitely useful.
And I think, too, Josh, I think, too, you know, that the areas that have, let's say, a high concentration of those chemicals that are more readily available, I think can be attractive targets for people looking to do damage. Whether, like you said earlier, maybe it's not a foreign-based type of terrorism. Maybe it is more the best domestic type of terrorism that somebody's pissed off at their local, you know, politician or something like that, and they want to make a statement that can happen in those areas. Like, you know, like Tim mentioned, it's not exclusive to the bigger areas, and it can be some of these smaller areas that, let's say, have those targets of opportunity for people. I have one other person on the line here. I think it might be Steve. Let me try to bring him in. Just get his quick. I don't want to keep on hold too long.
Bring him in. Bring him in.
Steve, is that you with us right now?
Hello?
Yeah, Steve, is that you?
Yes.
Hey, Steve.
How you doing, Jim?
All right. Steven, you're on here. We got Tim Noonan and Josh Knapp on as well, talking about this whole awareness and kind of being aware for terrorism and terrorist attacks. I know you and I just did a webinar on MCI management and some of the key points. And I actually come in tonight, Steve, too, because I know you talk a little bit about some of the key points that you like to focus on to kind of keep us as providers and as responders safe. So I don't want to go into a whole thing. We have, just to kind of maybe touch on some of those things. And I encourage people to go watch the webinar itself or on the website to get a more broader feel for it. But maybe you can just give a quick overview of those four items that maybe we can expand on a little bit more.
Yeah, it's nice to talk to you guys and listen to your input. I've done a lot of looking into mass casualty incidents, and you guys are right. It's not just New York City or Miami or Japan. It's Columbine, Colorado. It's all these places, Oklahoma City. And you know what? What I've learned is when the incident happens, we don't know the cause. And we have to train providers to watch out for the general hazards. I have the 10 rules I call to live and survive by. Because, you know what, the bottom line is when the firemen went to Oklahoma City, they thought it was a gas explosion. When the firemen went to the Trade Center the first time, they thought it was a transformer fire. And I think responders all around the country need to follow these generic all-hazard rules. And you guys bring up some regional points, which is always interesting, because I've met educators from Colorado, and they spend 3 days on altitude sickness, and I spend maybe 20 minutes on it here in the city. But you guys are right. Every location has an equal opportunity for terrorism, industrial accidents. And I teach my students, my three best friends that saved my butt on September 11th and the days afterwards, are time, distance, and shielding.
Yes, absolutely.
You minimize your time exposed to a hazard, you maximize your distance, and you wear the right shielding. We had APR masks and good equipment, and the gray smoke turned acrid black and came towards us. And I turned to the USAR team member next to me and I said, we need to move. And he said, brother, this mask will protect you from 30 different chemicals. My training told me the average house fire has 51 chemicals, and this is far from the average house fire. So I moved. You know, I think EMS responders everywhere need to know these all hazard rules, you know, the basic safety rules. And depending on where you are, we can always run into a school shooting. Or there was a corporate shooting, I think, back in 97. It was in Oregon. 21 people were killed. You guys are right. It's not just the cities. It's all around the country.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And when I talk about contamination and protecting yourself, I go along and, you know, there's the time distance shielding, and that is definitely, if you keep these simple rules in the back of your head, these things can save your life.
Absolutely.
You know, if you look at the idea of how you get the mechanism of contamination, there's exposure where you're sort of around something but not yet contaminated. There's external contamination, and then there's the killer. It's internal contamination. And one of the main things, and these are the things I wish I had known at Ground Zero, was that, you know, don't eat. If you're at a place where it's a frickin' dust storm and there's all sorts of stuff in the air, you don't know what it is, absolutely, respiratory protection is the number one thing. If you can't do that, do the next best thing. Keep your mouth shut. I mean, this goes beyond just the talking, you know? Don't drink, don't eat, don't smoke. Those are the things.
I was very lucky because being on the USAR team, we had some really good training. It wasn't anything special. It was hazmat tech class. It was confined space. All that good stuff out there, cross training, and we were taught you don't eat at the scene of a building collapse. And it was food next to the pile. You know, the other thing that I teach our providers is stop, look, listen, and think. And give the goosebumps on your arm a time to rise, because sometimes we go racing into these scenes and you go across that fine gray line, and you don't realize it, but it's a confined space job or a hazmat job. So it's good to train people to stop, look, listen, and think.
Right. Well, we actually talked about that at the very beginning of the show, where we like and what I like to train my students is, you know, let your spider sense tingle. You know, we always talk about scene safety, but rarely do we exercise it. And that's the thing. You know, if you give yourself a stop and you really treat scene safety with its due regard, you stop and you look at things, and then your mind can process it, and then your goosebumps can rise.
Absolutely. You know, the other element that's really missing is the real hardcore issue is we don't train the EMS people properly. We do a chalk and talk on the wall about triage and safety. And when they go to an MCI and they see a policeman dying or a fireman, you know, hopefully not, with a sludge wound reaction, they're going to go in and help them. I've realized we need to go somewhere like a fire academy and have shooting going on and cops and children dying and train our people not to go in. Because, and finally, it's in the protocols. We have an exposed person. You're supposed to isolate the patient first. But we have to train people not to go in, because until we do that, people are always going to rush in. I told Jim the other night, where I work in the fire department, we got a poster on the wall with 343 people that died in one day. And if we don't train people not to go in and to go to staging, we'll have more posters like that in the future. That's not what should happen.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we're not talking, you know, to the people listening, we're not talking like little old nannies here. I mean, this is experience in the field, and this is, you know, significant amounts of training, significant hours of training and preparation. And part of the game is to know when you can't go, when you're not prepared. You know, if you were walking along, let's say you were at a mall and somebody fell and they had a small scalp wound or something, but they're fairly messy, they're pretty bloody or something, or they're puking or something along that line, and you didn't have gloves. would you go in and handle that person and get your hands into their bodily fluids, or would you sort of stand back and say, "Hey, I don't have my proper BSI. I'm not treating this person." I mean, there's a larger extent to that when you come with a hazmat scene or in a WMD attack, and you know, again, it's not being nannies. I mean, the prevalence, the common thought is not if, it's when. So, and if you look at history, history is on the side of another attack, whether it be domestic or foreign. It, you know, another attack is going to happen. It may not happen here in New York, but somebody is going to be, you know, within the range of this conversation, somebody is going to be exposed to something.
Absolutely. You know, Josh, you brought a good point too, is about the, you know, the putting gloves on for, you know, some of the scalp wound. Would you go ahead and do that if you didn't have gloves? You know, we have to remember that we have to wear that personal protection, and it's also, when it comes to terrorism, chemicals and stuff like that, it's the appropriate level of protection that's available to us. You know, as far as respiratory protection, like Steve mentioned, you know, maybe that mask wasn't the best thing for, you know, 9/11, you know, BBP protection and even your helmet. Now, these are the type of things we have to really, I think, keep in mind, that we don't have the levels of protection that for some instance that we come in contact with, and if that, you know, that protection, the incident, and what we have available to us is, and our training actually is kind of beyond what we're prepared for, then again, stage away, you know, safe distance away, and request the appropriate resources to come and stabilize the scene so you can actually, you know, do something. And like
100%.
I said, instead of running into places, you know, we have to start training people to stop running into places you know, think about, you know, being away from places.
Be part of the solution and not part of the problem.
Right, exactly.
One of the examples where people didn't think of that and were very critical of the people who didn't go rushing in was in Pittsburgh a year and a half ago when the guy died because they didn't, you know, just abandon their ambulance and go trudging through the snow to get them. You know, we're not equipped for that. The smart thing to do is call somebody who has four-wheel drive. We need to use the right equipment rather than putting ourselves at risk and putting our patients at risk to go out and expose them to an environment that may not be safe.
Yeah, it really does. It innervates itself in every aspect of our job. And if you don't, there's something, I don't know who has that interesting sound effects going on in the background. there's an aspect that if you don't become aware, at least aware, and to folks listening to this, I don't want to, you know, start, oh my God, I can't get on the bus today because I don't have this training. All this training that we're talking about right now is basic level stuff. It's all available online. The programs that I've done with the CDP are 100% free. They're paid by you and me and our taxpayer dollars exactly for first responders, so we can know how to handle a situation that goes beyond what the norm is. You know, there's radiological courses, there's biological courses, there's all hazard courses. And they're free. They'll pay for your plane ticket. All you have to do is provide the time and get and show proof that you're involved in EMS or involved in a first responder role, and you can go. And this stuff, if you look up the CDP, Center for Domestic Preparedness, online, and I'm sure Jim will include some of the links on the show, you can fill out the application and you can go. And all you have to do is be an American citizen and a first responder.
So one of the best courses I ever took, to be honest with you, and where I learned the time resistant shielding, was the terrorism awareness course that was given. And I'm kind of in the middle of I was killing some time before our doctor came tonight, and I asked my students if they'd taken it, and in the entire class, nobody ever took it. So I think that's one of the best trainings is the terrorism awareness course that the Department of Justice had.
Right. Well, it's now a standardized awareness course. It's AWR 160. I happen to be an instructor from the CDP for it. Steve. And I'll tell you, I go out, and even if for people who've had it before and haven't had it in a couple of years, a refresher is always good. This is the stuff that we want to keep in the back of our minds. You know, we want to know that ERG with the coffee stains on it that's in your bus, underneath the seat of your bus, pick it up, take a look at it. These are the basic things that can keep you alive.
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
Josh, too, there's also an emergency response to terrorism kind of self-study program, too, that's available online through FEMA. And this is,
right.
You know, even that is something people can take, and they can go online and take that, and it's free, and it's a self-study course. And if, you know, you can't find something more, that's more of a hands-on thing or a classroom-type thing, at least try to do that. At least, you know, get in something. You know, go
and
online
you get
and do
it. You get CME for it. I mean,
right.
Holy mackerel, it's your time not wasted. You get CME. If you're doing a research program or something else, it's CME you can apply. And it's good stuff, and it's interesting stuff. And, I would definitely do the ICS 100 and 700, which is a national requirement, and then the terrorism course, the WMD awareness course. Hey, if nothing more, it'll make you a little bit more interesting around the station house.
Well, talk about ICS real quick. We only have about maybe another 5-10 minutes, but what have you guys taken as far as ICS goes? I mean, I know you get the 100, the 700, and I mean, some, if you're an officer and stuff like that, I think they require you to take
200.
The higher classes and whatnot. Do you find that this is something that's being pushed by your agency, that your agency is requiring this?
I'll let Steve answer that one.
Well, in New York City, I guess we have that phenomenon of now that the fire department understands. I mean, I've seen images of all the trucks. I think we lost 60 engines and 20 or 30 ladder trucks. And after 9/11, there's no expense spared with training. We get all the incident command training. We even do incident command with the firemen now. The EMS lieutenants do with the fire lieutenants and the fire chiefs. We had a great course in our emergency response plan where they talked about the details of dealing with radiological things, and they brought out a lot of the points from that terrorism awareness class. But I was told the other night that incident command is not required, you know, at all levels in fire departments around the country. Is that true?
No, well, my understanding is, and what I've seen in the last documentation, that if you're not in a supervisor capacity or above, all you need is 100 and 700, ICS 100 and NIM 700. And that's a federal requirement under the Department of Homeland Security Act from so many years ago.
That's even for the operations people like EMTs and firemen?
Yes. Yeah, as a matter of fact, you can lose any public money if you get audited and you are not in compliance with that. If you're a private organization, you've never gone for a grant dollar, it really is not going to affect you. You can do what you want, which is unfortunate but true. But if you're like a volunteer agency and you're taking public dollars, you should be in compliance with the 100, 700, and any of your management needs to have 200.
So I'm sorry, I joined you guys late. This is Tim talking?
No, this is Josh Knapp.
Josh Knapp, and you're an instructor for terrorism awareness?
Yes, I've been an instructor for about 6 years now, maybe going on 7.
You know, when I go on to speak places, you know, I always think to myself, what question would I ask me? You know, how do you prepare for something like September 11th? And what bothers me is every incident we've seen is an astronomical increase in fatalities, going from the 93 Trade Center where 7 people died to Oklahoma City 220 to the World Trade Center where coworkers of mine are still dying.
Yeah.
And what I say is how you prepare for these incidents is get all the cross training you can get. And you know, when we were standing there and there was no command structure, it was the intangible things that each of us bring. One guy was a camper. One was a hiker. We all had confined space. We all had hazmat. But get as much training as you can and as much cross training. All these classes listed are awesome. And that's how you prepare for the unknown. And you sit in the training and you toss your kids around. And that guy in the corner who belongs to the ambulance and the fire, who we always thought was a little crazy, well, listen to him because he might be right next time.
Yeah, yeah, you're 100%. And you know what? Again, I'm not here. These guys, I'm not here as a salesman for CDP or any of the other organizations out there. But you know, when we got DHS, we got something. We got a whole bunch of dollars that were allotted to training. And these guys, if you get 20 guys. You can contact the 20 people together in one space. You can contact these agencies, and again, for free, they'll come out. They'll run through the scenarios. They'll do the blackboard training, the whiteboard training, but they'll also run you through physical scenarios. And one of the best ones for EMS agencies are the decontamination scenarios, not necessarily the treatment. I mean, there's a wonderful – when I was down in Anston – there was a wonderful course down there that allowed you to go and treat everything from bubonic plague to nerve gas attack to radiological exposure. You know, you're not going to really – your chances of you seeing that all in the field, you know, but at least you got to practice something and you got to go through the ICS and you got to, you know, again, practice, practice, practice.
Hey Josh, yes. Guys, only got about maybe 3 minutes left, so I want to end it there. I don't want to get into another topic and then we can't finish up. So I just want to end it there for now. I want to thank the three of you guys for joining me tonight. I really appreciate it. I think we gave some good content out tonight. I think maybe pointing people in the right direction just to getting some additional training and maybe hopefully encouraging people to do that as well. So thanks for three of you for joining me. I'm going to put, of course, all three of your blogs and your links to your blogs and whatnot on the in the show notes so people can go find out some more information about you as individuals and what you guys are all about as well. So thanks so much for joining me. I really appreciate it, guys. And, Tim, sorry I didn't get in there too much tonight. I got a little bit crowded.
Okay.
So, all right. So, guys, have a great week, and I'm sure I'll talk to you guys soon.
Thanks, Jim. Take care.
All right. Good night.
Good night now.
Good night.
Well, guys, again, thanks for joining me tonight on this Office Hours. Remember, I think the takeaway tonight, try to remember that your safety is going to come first. You know, try to stay in teams. I got some information here from Greg Freeze's website. He had a little post here about some top tips for MCI terrorism awareness. And I kind of ended it, and I think it kind of good way to end the podcast tonight too. And it's, you know, stay in teams, avoid freelancing, and frequently reassess the hazards that you're involved with. You know, terrorism incidents can involve and evolve and actually can use multiple attacks to focus on both patients and responders. So try to cross-train, like Steve said, too. Cross-train in various medical and rescue specialties. Prepare, you know, think out of the box. Broaden your abilities and try to do planning drills and do things that challenge rescuers and exceed, you know, our normal range of what we expect out there in the field. Terrorist MCIs are often, you know, they're increasing in the amount of fatalities that there are, and they're getting more dramatic with every time there's an attack, like we mentioned during this podcast. And think about those worst-case scenarios that you might come in contact that might wind up being a reality. So try to hold those drills and try to hold them with all of the people that might be involved in an MCI, including fire, police, EMS, everyone that might be involved in that type of thing, all the players. And if you practice together, in the post there, it brings off a really good kind of home point. And it says if you practice together, we'll wind up succeeding together at any MCI. And that's what we want to do, is succeed together, not get hurt, and try to save as many people as we can. I hope you enjoyed tonight's Office Hours. If you join me live, thanks again. As always, you can always look at this and any archived Office Hours over at emsofficehours.com. If you have anything you want to talk about on your own, be sure to go ahead and send me an email at jhoffman@ems-safety.com. You're more than happy to try to squeeze your topic in one of the upcoming episodes and talk about what you want to talk and thoughts regarding the EMS community. So thanks again for joining me, guys. This is Jim Hoffman from EMS Office Hours. And as always, stay safe.